is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this. Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Chicago. Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning and welcome on in. It's Tyler Rocky, Shay Norling with you here on ESPN Chicago. You can always take us on the go with the ESPN Chicago app and watch the show on YouTube. YouTube.com, search ESPN Chicago. Catch all of the other shows there as well. And Shay, we now have college football in the rear view, and the most glorious weekend of football is upon us now, as we've got multiple rivalry games. On one front, we've got a divisional rivalry, NFC East. Yep. You've got the Commanders and the Eagles. Other side, you've got what I believe is the greatest rivalry in sports going right now.
Yep.
Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. I'm not talking about Bills and Chiefs, but Allen Mahomes is the best rivalry going in sports right now.
100%.
You can keep your Red Sox Yankees. You can keep your Bears Packers. You can keep your Ohio State Michigan. I got this one.
Well, this is just what happens in the NFL. When you get, and I'm going to say it, when you get QB1 and QB2, like Brady and Manning for many years, and they meet this frequently in the playoffs. This is the, I believe, the only quarterbacks who have met more in the playoffs than Mahomes and Allen is Brady and Manning. It becomes the top level rivalry in sports.
It's the best. And it's weird though, because it doesn't seem like there's animosity. That's the one like different part of this rivalry. It seems like it's mutual respect there, but I guess you could say that's probably how Brady Manning felt
for
too.
Sure. They were best friends off the field.
And maybe there's like hidden, not jealousy or hatred, but there's a fuel, I bet, with Josh Allen, because he's never won one of these in the playoffs. He's had all of the regular season success, but once you get to the playoffs, and they play each other every single year in the regular season, just because they're both winning their divisions every single year ever since Josh Allen rose to prominence. But yeah, no, I think this is the best rivalry we've got going in sports right now. I'm excited to see another iteration of it. And for this Bills team, it feels like this is a now or never type of situation, because it's only going to get more and more difficult as you continue to see Josh Allen's cap number go through the roof. It's just the way quarterbacking is right now. You're going to see a lot of teams run into this issue, because especially after we saw all of the quarterbacks get signed this past offseason. Jared Goff, Joe Burrow an offseason ago, Justin Herbert an offseason ago, Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa. Like, it's a difficult climb now to build your team around the quarterback. This is phase one of the Bills' sort of teardown of the roster. And that's why, to me, it's so impressive and why I believe Josh Allen's the MVP of the league.
Yep.
Because he was able to get this team to 13-4.
Yeah, I think I'm not ready to say that this is now or never for the Buffalo Bills. Because, frankly, when you have an all-time great quarterback, and he is, like, I know people are going to hear that and go, oh, Josh Allen, all-time great. He's the only quarterback in the history of the league to have 40 touchdowns, 8 or fewer turnovers, and less than 20 sacks in a season. The only one ever. He's got the 6th best playoff passer rating of all time. He's an all-time great quarterback. When you have that, I think you can overcome the cap restrictions, like the Chiefs have done with Mahomes, where there's no reason that they should continue to be this successful with the cap hit that's on their quarterback and the fact that they haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver and they've become a defense-first team. But they do, because they have a quarterback who in the big moments will not make mistakes. He's not going to lose you a game. Mm-hmm. He's going to be effectively perfect. And that lets you overcome a lot of the stuff that goes on elsewhere on your roster. I think the Bills are in that position. I do think it's now or never for Sean McDermott. This is like, dude, Allen has played practically perfect football in the playoffs against this team specifically. He gets to 340 yards a game in the playoffs against the Chiefs. He's got 9 total touchdowns in those games, only 1 interception. He's 0-3. They're scoring 28 points a game in the playoffs against Kansas City, and he's 0-3. Nobody can ever tell me that it's anyone's fault other than McDermott's that his defense, and he's a defensive coach, totally folds when they get to this specific spot in the playoffs. if that happens again tomorrow and you've got another mercurial Josh Allen performance and the defense just decides we're going to let go of the rope and let Mahomes march us to hell, well, then I guess that's it for Sean McDermott for me.
So is it lost no matter how it looks tomorrow? McDermott's gone?
There's a world.
Or at least in your world?
Yeah, and I'm not telling you what the Bills are going to do, but look, if you paint the picture, you're in conference championship weekend and you have an assistant coach on your staff who was one of the most sought-after head coach names in Joe Brady. It feels pretty likely he's going to end up without a chair when the music stops just because of the success the team has had, the fact that they're still playing. So you can build a situation where Josh Allen goose eggs and just has a horrible game against Kansas City and the Bills. Like, if it looks like Ravens-Chiefs last year, where the Bills hold the Chiefs to 17 points and lose, well, then I'm willing to have a different conversation. But I think the likelihood that Josh Allen, guy who has been one of the all-time playoff performers and has always shown up against this team, just lays an egg rather than they'll lose because McDermott's defense folds in the final minutes. I feel like that's likelier. Now, I actually think the Bills will win, but I'm just painting the picture of where the stakes are for me. If that were me running the team, I'd elevate Joe Brady. I'd make him the head coach. Thank you for your services, Sean McDermott. Respectfully, hit the bricks.
Yeah. Is this do or die for Sean McDermott tomorrow against the Chiefs? 312-332-3776. Because it's weird how you kind of think about what the AFC has been, because it's gone through phases. Obviously, it had the Brady phase. Now we're in the Mahomes era, and Josh Allen's pretty much ridden sidecar alongside Mahomes. Mahomes has gotten all the headlines, and rightfully so. He's won back-to-back Super Bowls, has a chance to be the first ever team that has won three in a row. And now we sit with, listen, I don't think people really understand how long Sean McDermott's been the head coach of this team, too.
Like, 8 years.
It's incredible to me. I would have thought it's like five, maybe six. But eight, and you can't slay the one beast that's been in front of you the whole time. Like, that to me is kind of grounds for, all right, let's speed this thing up. You got to shake it up somehow. And maybe it's change for change's sake, and maybe Joe Brady gets elevated and it's a complete disaster. But I think you have to shuffle the deck in some way if you do lose this game.
And you're not moving on from the quarterback. He's not the second best quarterback in football, the third. Like, you have a top three with a bullet, no doubt, quarterback. You can't move on. So if you lose again at this stage, at some point, it has to be the head coach. And I referenced this on Cap'n Jay Hood this week. There is, in the history of this league, no quarterback and head coach pairing that have been together for more than 5 years and won their first Super Bowl after that point. For McDermott and Allen, it's been seven. If you get to this same stage, you're knocking on the door of going to the Super Bowl and you fail again, I have a hard time believing the pairing of McDermott and Allen gets it done going forward. Because I got news, as much as we're talking about how impressive it is that the Bills are 13-4 and what they've accomplished with their quarterback this season, the Chiefs are in year two of tearing down their roster.
Yeah.
Next year, they
went 15-2.
They're back. Like, next year, they probably do make the move finally for a 1,000-yard receiver, and you get Rashee Rice healthy. And, like, the defense with Spagnuolo, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Well, we know Spags isn't going anywhere.
So, their future is actually brighter going forward because they've weathered the storm of losing their weapons and not being able to replace them in free agency with potentially consecutive Super Bowl seasons.
Well, not just that, but like, even though Patrick Mahomes is one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, his contract actually keeps getting more friendly.
Yep.
And all of these other quarterbacks, it kind of goes the opposite way.
It's why it's better to pay him early.
Yeah. And Mahomes is a different case too. They gave him the 10-year deal. Like, you don't see that in a sport like this, as dangerous as it is, to give him a 10-year, $450 million deal. They've shuffled the money. This thing is going to age very, very nicely over the course of time. Like, to me, this Chiefs team is set up, and you're right. Like, that's kind of what they're missing right now, is that dynamic, game-breaking receiver. And who knows? Maybe they go out and even bring Tyreek Hill back on a deal like that, or go out and acquire a T. Higgins.
It sounds like they're going to let Trey Smith walk, which gives them a little bit more wiggle room in terms of spending. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go find... Now, T. Higgins, I think the destination is written. He's going to be in New England. That's just what kind of what everything
Green
feels
Bay.
Like. But if you want to go out and trade for Tyreek Hill, that's out there. If you want to get Stephon Diggs, that's out there. And I think Travis Kelce probably moves on. Noah Gray, right, positioned very well to be their next tight end.
I think Super Bowl and Kelce calls it a career.
Do you think if they lose tomorrow, Kelce still calls it? I think he's done, man.
Can I give you a scenario? Because like everyone's all up like, oh, the NFL is feeding calls to the Chiefs because they need the Chiefs. What if the NFL conspires against the Chiefs because they realize if Kelce doesn't win the Super Bowl, he'll run it back another year. But if he does win the Super Bowl, this might be it. And they know Taylor Swift is kind of this golden goose around the NFL.
Is she?
She's brought plenty of viewers.
Has she?
I think she, look at the numbers from last year.
I know, but like, is that still true this year? And really, I still have the issue of like, it's the NFL, man. People were going to watch regardless.
I get that, but it is, you cannot deny it's not bringing new eyeballs. And it's not creating new football fans.
I can't wait for the clip of Taylor Swift and Caitlin Clark in the suite again. I'm so excited.
Is Caitlin Clark going again?
I have no idea. Uh-huh. Maybe. Why not? Apparently they're friends now.
Why wouldn't Haley Steinfeld be in the box with her?
Listen, respect greatness, okay? Listen, Haley Steinfeld was at the Bills game last weekend, never got on camera. I actually appreciated it. Don't make a spectacle of yourself. You don't need to do it. Just hang out. Watch your fiance play football.
You think CBS even knew? Like, you think Jim Nance or Tony Romo even know who she is?
Tell him that she was the voice in the Spider-Man movies. Yeah.
You think Jim Nance is watching Spider-Man?
Ooh, Jim, I loved her as Spider-Girl.
But yeah, maybe the fix is in to get the Chiefs to the Super Bowl and then run things back another year. So they'll watch the Super Bowl. And maybe you'll see some of the calls go the other way.
So that Taylor Swift can be at Chiefs games.
For another year.
Even if he does retire, they can still go to Chiefs games together.
Doesn't mean they will.
You don't think ESPN's going to throw a bag at him the way they did Jason Kelce and be like, we want the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce pregame show.
But then you have to pay Taylor Swift too. I don't know if the mouse has that money right now.
I don't know if anybody has that money.
Exactly. But yeah, no, on the flip side of this game, like the Chiefs have really skated by, but I look at what Kansas City has done over the course of the last couple of weeks, and it feels like things are starting to ramp up a little offensively for them to the point where you look at, even though only 23 points last week, and then but it was the final 2 weeks of the season, 27 against the Texans, 29 against the Steelers. Those are both good defenses. The Bills, this is the thing, and it's part of the reason why I feel the way that I felt about the Lions is the Bills don't have the defensive infrastructure, especially along the defensive line, that I feel like is necessary to compete. Now, when you have Josh Allen on the other side, who he can be Superman on any given drive, you're always going to have a chance. And I don't know if this Chiefs offense is good enough to completely run away from Buffalo, but I just think that the defensive line for the Bills right now is not in a situation where you can say definitively, oh, yeah, Buffalo can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think they'll struggle on that front. And like you said, it's going to be Josh Allen extending drives and going superhero mode. Von Miller, I think if the Bills could do that again, they wouldn't. Even with the sack or the fumble recovery that he ran back to the 20-yard line. It hasn't been what they thought they were getting. Their pass rush has lacked a little bit. Their defensive line against the run, I mean, Christ, Derrick Henry just gashed them over the course of a drive. And I do think it was ridiculous for Todd Monken not to use him on one of the two-point tries. Just dumb. Mm-hmm. Even the Mark Andrews play that everybody sells as this incredible play call and just Mark Andrews has to catch the ball. Yes, obviously that's true. But when you call sprint out for your quarterback who is a runner and you are not giving him an opportunity to run the ball into the end zone, probably not great, and you're making him throw a really short lateral football to the pylon where there's an extra defender, you made life more difficult than you needed to when you could have simply handed the ball to Derrick Henry against a D-line that can't stop it. The Chiefs, I don't think, will make those mistakes. Like, Andy Reid is not going to willfully make life harder for his offense. Mm-hmm. Their life is hard enough. They don't have game breakers. And it, really, this is where I put the pressure on McDermott. I know what to expect from Josh Allen. I know what to expect from the Chiefs' offense. If you're going to play a style of defense that'll just allow Travis Kelce to float between zone coverage and find an open space, then you're going to get 1,000 cuts to death.
That's the way that the Chiefs have lived all year long. And it's like, and Travis Kelce, the way that he ramps up for the playoffs, like, we can call him cooked during the regular season. Playoffs, he's been phenomenal. Last playoffs and then the start of this playoff so far, he ramps up towards the end of these seasons here.
He's doing the Luka Doncic, where you show up.
Kelce.
Yeah, it's the thing where you show up to camp in the early part of the season, and you look a little overweight and a little slow, and you don't have all the horses that you had. And then you get to, like, the later part of the season, and you've played your way in shape. That's what Kelce's doing now. His offseason isn't about the football that it has been. It's about doing a horror movie on Hulu and going touring with Taylor Swift in South America. And then you can see early in the year, like, dude, he was slow. He was not the same guy. And now he's played his way into football shape, and he's probably 80% of who he was when he was truly
great.
Which
is still damn good.
Right. So it's like he's back, and it's a dynamic to their offense that they need because they don't have a 1,000-yard receiver. I think the last time they had a 1,000-yard receiver was Travis Kelce, and it might have been 2021. Like, it's been that long.
Yeah, and part of that is Mahomes, especially...
spreads the ball out.
Yeah, post-Tyreek is finding everybody. And I think they've had maybe until this season, but they've had a complimentary run game as well that's helped them. And it certainly helps when you've got the protection that he has in front of him as well with guys like Joe Tooney and Creed Humphrey and what we've seen with Trey Smith, too. It's always funny to me that he's been able to do it without always having, like, a stellar tackle around him too.
Look, I think if I'm Buffalo, it's pretty simple game plan. Like, if I'm Sean McDermott, I think early first half against Baltimore, there were some things you can take away. Stack the box and just snuff out the run. Derrick Henry is not active first half of that game. Do a lot of that, set up second and long, third and long for the Chiefs, and then blitz your ass off. Get real creative. If he's going to do what he did last week and rush three, then you're dead. I mean, if you aren't even going to effort to put pressure on Mahomes, you're dead. You got to blitz. You got to get creative. You got to send corners. It just, the whole three-man, four-man rush deal and the spy, you can't do it. If you do that, you're done. And I think Buffalo does win the game, but it is mostly because I trust Josh Allen in these spots that much.
Yeah. I'm on the other side. I lean with Kansas City. I think defensively, it's just they're going to provide some resistance against the Bills. And on the flip side, I just don't see their defense standing up. Plus, the game's at Arrowhead, too. That's a significant advantage for Kansas City. Yeah. Listen, if Josh Allen goes out and wins this game, I tip my hat. And I bet you probably feel the same way. Like, if Mahomes just goes out and is the Mahomes we know, you tip your hat. Like,
of course.
We're talking about two of the best quarterbacks we've seen in our lifetime.
Here's what I'll say. Don't let it come down to a penalty, and don't let it come down to some voodoo BS where I can blame the coven underneath Arrowhead for performing a satanic ritual at the exact right moment.
Yep, smearing goat blood.
Don't let it be like some wacky Tyler Bass missed field goal, God forbid a doink. Don't let it be
wide right,
like a Harrison Butker doinking in. Don't let it be a blocked field goal. Don't let it be a penalty. And I'll say this too. If I'm Buffalo and I see Patrick Mahomes doing his little scamper up the sideline deal, like, if I'm Matt Milano, just light him the F up. Somebody, please, for the love of God, hit this dude hard. I'm so sick of watching what happens when he takes to the sideline. Do you remember the Niner game earlier this year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mahomes just tiptoeing on the sideline, doing little ballet moves to stay in bounds on his tightrope. Yep. And I can't remember who the linebacker was. Forgive me. Pulls up, knowing if I hit him, I'm going to get penalized. Do me a favor. Take the 15 yards and throw him into the bench.
You know,
make him have a chat with the backups. Like, it's just enough of this.
You know what's funny is I always remember must have been 2019. Chiefs and Patriots. And seeing the same thing happen with Chris Jones to Tom Brady. And it wasn't a scramble, but it was he kind of lets up because he doesn't want a roughing the passer call.
It was the body weight rule, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like the first year of it?
And so he lets up and he doesn't hit him. And then Brady makes a miraculous play. And this was back when, like, Tony Romo was actually pointing stuff out, and he pointed that out. And it was like, that now you're kind of seeing that same thing with the Chiefs. And I do think the NFL has to step in, kind of like what college football has done with the fake slide rule. There's a way to circumvent this. Now, the tightrope along the sideline, it's a little bit different to a degree because you are technically in bounds the whole time.
Right.
And even though you look like you're going out of bounds, like, that would be like outlawing the juke at that point.
But that's the problem. And the NFL has made it this way where defenders don't know how they're going to be officiated on certain types of hits.
Like, do you allow one step out of bounds and you can still hit the guy? Like, that's probably the only way to go around it.
If I'm Sean McDermott, and I'm not even talking about what the NFL should do. I'm just the way that it's been called all year and the way that they've called fouls on Mahomes. If I'm Sean McDermott, I'm telling my guys, if he's a step out of bounds, light him up. It like, genuinely. And I understand people are going to take issue with that, but hear me. I'm not saying if he's 10 feet off the white, go into the bench and light him up. I'm not saying hit him cheap or hit him dirty. But this whole deal where they don't feel like they can tackle on the perimeter when it's a quarterback, just enough. Take the penalty. Send the message, we are not allowing you to do this.
I think you can do it once. You can't do it the whole game.
No, of course not. But
then you're living on the penalty edge there. And
but again, I watched it in the Niner game where he's on the sideline tiptoeing and they're pulling up because they think he's going out of bounds and they don't want to give up a 15-yard penalty. And then you blink your eye and Mahomes is still on his feet running to the goal line. It was like an extra 30 yards gained because somebody thought, if I hit him, I'm going to get penalized. Mm-hmm. So just hit him.
Are you trying to get aggregated again?
No, dude, it's football. I don't know what the issue with this is.
What he did last time.
Everybody's so... Everybody gets
classic Shea playbook here.
No, but it's the same thing because everybody got mad at me. And Washington radio stations are playing my clip because I said Jaden Daniels has a busted rib. Somebody light him up. Get in the backfield and hit him in the ribs. And they're like, oh, this guy's telling him to hurt Jaden Daniels. Dude, wake up. What do you think's happening in an NFL locker room? Do you think they're all sitting around and going, Jaden Daniels has a hurt rib. Let's take it easy on him. Don't hit him hard in his hurt rib. It'd be really mean. It's football.
Clip
hit
that.
People.
Clip that for the network, Kevbo. Thank you.
I'll have Hannah do it.
Kevin, am I wrong? It's so dumb.
No, oh, you're not wrong
at all. We're scared of getting a penalty on Mahomes, so we're just going to let him run up the sideline for free. No, somebody send a message. You are not doing this today. And if you want to do it, we're going to light you up. And if I'm Matt Milano, this isn't me saying somebody get hurt. I'm going to make that clear. But if I'm Matt Milano and Mahomes is scampering out of bounds and I crack him in his ribs and he can't play the rest of the game, you think I'm going to weep?
No.
I'm going to wave goodbye and enjoy my trip to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're going to New Orleans at that point. So, listen, you cannot, like, perpetually do it. But, yes, I do think some sort of message has to be sent. Because, like, say what you want about the Bills as a team. They're fantastic. I don't think anyone would call them physical. And I think you probably need some sort of element of physicality if you want to go out and beat the Chiefs. It's just the way it's going to be. And I think offensively, there's an element of physicality, but it really lies on one guy. Like, I don't look at their tight ends and be like, oh, that's a group of guys that are just going to lay you out. Like, there's no George Kittle on that team. There's no TJ Hockenson on that team. Guys who are just going to play physical with you up front. I don't see that on Buffalo. I don't see their receivers being extra active blocking like you see in L.A. with the Rams or with the Niners. They don't have that. They've got one guy, even like their best running back, James Cook. He's a finesse guy. He's not a power guy. He's not going to run you over. He's going to try to run past you. Josh Allen is the lone semblance of physicality, even on their offensive line. There's no nasty on that offensive line. There's no guy that scares you there. It's Josh Allen. It's one guy and one guy only. And if you're going to go out, listen, Chiefs are going to try to turn this into a grind it out type of game. They've done it all year. And even though they may put a few more points on the board because of what the defensive resistance is on the other side, they live on the knife's edge. It's what they've done all season long. And I don't think this week's going to be any different. And that's probably more of a testament to the fact that number 17 on the other side is right now playing like football Jesus. So if you want to live in that world where everything's close, you're going to have to be the more physical team down the stretch.
Yep. And listen, I'd say the same thing to the Bills. Like, if you got a shot on Josh Allen, you take it.
You mean the Chiefs,
Right, the Chiefs. If you're the Chiefs defense and you got a shot on Josh Allen, you take it.
I just can't imagine it making the same impact.
No, it's a different situation because, let's be honest, you don't hit Josh Allen, Josh Allen hits you. Like, it's a totally different thing. And I, frankly, I don't see Josh Allen doing the extra defender sideline stuff nearly as much because he runs up the middle. He's a freight train. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different style. So if you want to play that, best of luck. You're going to have to hit him anyway. It's just, I think the Bills' game plan has to be send an early message. Mahomes, you're not getting away with this garbage. And blitz early and often.
Yeah.
Pressure him as much as possible. He's taken more sacks this season than any other year in his career. His tackles stink. Pressure from the edge. And I think the Bills have a decent amount of edge pressure. I think they can actually do this if they don't do what they did in the second half against Baltimore and start playing to not lose.
I can't wait for this game.
I'm so excited.
I told you my new ritual that I have whenever these two teams meet up in the playoffs. I watch on YouTube, they've got the final like 2 minutes plus overtime of the 2022 divisional game, which for my money is the best game I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that game was pure theater. And the back and forth nature of it, the 13 seconds, I mean, that is probably leading off for me Mahomes Hall of Fame reel right there. What he did in the 13 seconds to get the field goal and then to go out and win the game in overtime, I mean, that is, for my money, the best game I've ever seen in my life, at least from a standpoint of I don't have a stake in the game. I'll always hold 2016 with the Cubs because not only was Game 7 against Cleveland one of the all-time great baseball games, but it was also just like when you have the stake in it that I have as a Cubs fan, it just further adds to that. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to be a Chiefs or a Bills fan watching that game. It would have been torture. But when you were able to be a neutral observer for that game, it clearly, to me, the best game I've ever seen in my life. I don't think it'll ever be topped.
Who was it that on the third touchdown, I think, for Gabe Davis, when he put the little hip move on the corner and he sent him to just meet God?
He just
threw him in the dirt. I can't remember who the corner. It might have been Jaden Hicks. He just threw him in the dirt. It was amazing.
Everything about that game.
It was perfect football, both sides of the ball, the whole way through.
Don't let 42-36 distract you from the fact that there wasn't good defense in that
game. No, the first 58 minutes of the game was unbelievable defense.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't even like the defense got bad. It was just unbelievable offense.
Quarterback masterclasses from both guys.
Now, the Bills' defensive game plan in the final 13 seconds lacked a little bit, but that's okay. I mean, it's just that game's theater. If I see another version of that, I will be thrilled.
Yeah, but I can't wait. I'm gonna watch the highlights tomorrow in between the games, and it's what I do.
I almost went home yesterday right as my wife was getting home. I was putting on 2022 Bills Chiefs. I thought I had time before she got home, and I'm like, I can just watch this. And she walked in and she goes, what are you doing?
Why are you sweating?
Yeah, exactly. She's like, what are you watching right now? I didn't know there was a game on. And I'm like, no, this is the 2022 divisional, remember? And she's like
turn it off.
She like looked at me like I had four heads. She's like, go in a different room if you're going to do all this. Just please leave me alone.
I saw yesterday NFL Network was replaying like all of the great Bills Chiefs games, and it was just on a loop back to back to back because they're all great.
They're just so good.
The
regular season games have been incredible. The Josh Allen hurdle game at Arrowhead a couple years ago. It every time these teams get together, it's theater. This year, earlier in the season, obviously Jim Nance with the call on the play of the year in the NFL.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, 26 yards on 4th-and-2 to the end zone. Like, every time these teams get together, it is football theater.
Yeah.
Like, this is why we watch the NFL.
It is the best rivalry we've got going in sports right now. And it's not Chiefs Bills. It is Allen Mahomes.
I'll even add to it, the Brady Manning thing. Like, everybody was thrilled to see those matchups all the time. More often than not, Brady blew them out. Like, it just, they weren't end game drama all the time. And these Bills Chiefs games have been just thrill rides.
Yeah. I mean, everything comes, it's you always hear like, oh, who has the ball last? Who has the ball last? And like, yeah, this is what these are. This is a who has the ball last type of deal. And it's entertaining. It is entertaining to see because even when you think the guy has the ball last, he may not be the one with the ball last.
I do feel like we're going to get way too much Romo on the like, Jimmy, these two quarterbacks, man, I'm telling you what, like if this game could look away and boy, these two guys, it could look different at the end, couldn't it? These two guys, they get the ball with 2 minutes left. I tell you, you know, if I'm Mahomes, I don't want to give Josh Allen the ball. And if I'm Josh Allen, I don't want to give Mahomes the ball, Jim. Like, that's just, we're going to get too much of it.
Probably.
Because he doesn't do good calls anymore. Like, last week, I thought he was really good. But I have a feeling we're going to get dud Romo tomorrow. I hope not.
To me, it doesn't matter either way.
Jim!
Let the quarterbacks play. All right, when we come back, let's talk about the other game. We've got Eagles, we've got Commanders, and a chance for a rookie to go to the Super Bowl for the first time ever in NFL history. We'll discuss when we come back.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Welcome back to Tyler Rocky and Shay Norling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
Commanders, and you've got the Eagles. Third meeting between these two teams as their divisional foes, and they've split so far this year, but if you really dig into it, it does feel like Philly is 2-0 in those games.
Of course it does.
Because they were up 21-7 on Washington in the first game, in the first quarter, and then Jalen Hurts goes out with the concussion that he missed the rest of the regular season with. Has come back in the playoffs, has not looked like the same guy, but it really hasn't mattered because they've got Saquon Barkley and they've been able to run all over every single team. And I don't think Washington's going to be much different. Washington already is one of the worst run defenses alive in the playoffs and just really of any of the playoff teams in general, allowing over 6 yards per carry in the playoffs, allowing almost 5.5 yards per carry in the regular season. And now you go up against the best rushing offensive line, the best running back, and just a quarterback who does have a dual threat dynamic to him as well.
Yeah, and you didn't mention the defensive side of the ball, where I've said for 2 months now, I think the Eagles have the best unit in football. It's astounding. Like, their defensive line, there is no hole. They've got rookie corners playing like veterans. Quinyon Mitchell's been a full participant in practice all week. Mm-hmm. Cooper DeJean has been a high-level player in their backfield. It just...
Zach Bond is
the
like...
the linebacker. He's been incredible.
He's been on a one-year deal. He's going to make himself a lot of money after this year.
And look, man, the reality is when you have Jalen Carter, who will take double and triple teams, the rest of your D-line's life gets easier. And when Jalen Carter does break through, he's a nuclear missile. Like, it just, for me, this is Lions Commanders 2.0 if the Lions had an elite defense. And I think that the Eagles will avoid the pitfalls that Detroit had of getting away from the run because the Eagles do not want to throw the ball. Like, their ideal game ends with Jalen Hurts south of 20 pass attempts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to shrink this game down best you can. And the other thing with Philly, too, we didn't mention this, but they probably have the best play caller. I guess Andy Reid on the other side, probably the best play caller of any of the remaining coordinators. But this is the best true coordinator.
Kellen Moore, yeah.
No, Vic Fangio,
yeah.
Fangio is the best coordinator remaining in the playoffs right now.
Kellen Moore does a really good job with their offense. Yeah. Like, they have high-level coordinators, which is the difference between what happened 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl and what happened last year. They didn't have high-level coordinators last year. And now they have Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. And I agree, Fangio's an incredible defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Like, him and Spags are the same type of guy to me, where clearly you weren't cut out to be a head coach. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But as a defensive coordinator, capital E, elite.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it everywhere he goes, whether it was in San Francisco and then here in Chicago. He was fantastic. And now we're seeing it in Philly. It didn't work in Denver. But you look at what he's done to revitalize this Eagles defense. I mean, remember the preseason, the way that people thought about this Eagles defense? It's like, there was always talent there, but it's like we were discrediting the talent that the Eagles defense had. And this was before the emergence of their two defensive backs as well, mm-hmm. the rookies, and of course it was Zach Bond too. And all of a sudden, he's turned it into one of the better defenses we've seen as of late. The ability to get after the passer, and it's one of those things too, that this team can sustain injuries and they'll move along. It does not matter.
Yeah.
They have sustained injuries. N'Kobe Dean's out for the rest of the season.
They've had games where Lane Johnson hasn't been able to go. And that, like, they went to Tampa. I believe that was one of their losses. Lane Johnson didn't play. Devontae Smith didn't play.
A.J. Brown didn't play.
When you're missing a Hall of Fame tackle and your top two receivers, life gets really difficult. But obviously they aren't in that position now. And they still could have won that game. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of look at it and I think they can sustain any level of injury. N'Kobe Dean, look, he's their green dot. He's their captain on defense. He's their leader, but he's not their best linebacker. And they haven't had an actual talent drop-off, even if they've had a communication drop-off. But the important thing is the guy calling the plays and getting him into the helmet, same dude.
Mm-hmm. And he's been fantastic his entire career. We talked about this on the Pick Aside podcast. You can find that on the Chicago's College Tailgate tab of the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Chicago's College Tailgate. The rushing prop on Saquon Barkley is out of this world crazy. It is currently sitting at 130.5. And the gambler in me can do nothing but bet under. But when you really crunch the football numbers of it all, and Saquon's gone over that number twice already this season against Washington, when you crunch the football part of it, it's nothing but over.
It really is. It's the 30th ranked rush defense for Washington. Saquon has eaten up bad defenses.
I mean, he's eaten up bad defenses, but his offensive line doesn't have him touched. Like, he has 50, 60-yard runs. He's not breaking tackles. He's outrunning the opponent.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, if it's you're getting 2 yards per carry before contact. That's how good this offensive line is. Mm-hmm. The push that they get, they're moving the opposing D-line a full 2 yards before Saquon even gets touched, if he gets touched. The two home runs he hit last week, wasn't touched on either of them. And it's why I laugh a little bit when people are like, Saquon's the MVP of the league. Well, come on. He's one of the fastest backs in football, and he's getting 2 yards before contact. Yeah, you give the MVP to the offensive line as a unit if we want to go that route. But it doesn't take away from the fact he's had an outstanding season. And 130.5 is the funniest rushing yard line I've ever seen posted.
I mean, just prop in general
absurd.
Number. I've never seen, like, I can't even give you a comp to, like, anything I've seen.
I mean, the Mike Evans week 18, 100.5 yards or whatever
like,
it was.
You at least understand that, right? Like, they're obviously trying to get him to a certain number. So, like, you understood it.
When they post 130.5 on rushing yardage for a single player, it really just means they can't get a handle on it, and they have to put an absurd number out.
We're at a point now with the way that NFL running backs are cycled. Everything's backed by commit. Like, every team's got two running backs now. 70, 80 yards is a good game.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about almost double that number as a rushing prop.
I mean, by rule, if you're talking about a running back rushing prop, I can't recommend anything other than under if their number starts with a 9. Like, it's that's insane.
Yeah.
To go to 130 is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never seen it.
But you have to account, Like, Saquon's going to rip off a run of 40-plus in this game.
And
it's
even
just what he does.
Even the Eagles are running back by committee to an extent. They will rotate Kenneth Gainwell in, and they will give him consecutive carries. Saquon will hit the home runs and then get off the field.
Yeah.
Like, if you watched the Ravens last week, it was the same deal with Derrick Henry. They were rotating guys in and out, and Henry's not getting every carry. So for Saquon to have that number, they are building in. He's going to get a 70-yard rush at some point.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of this game, you've got Jaden Daniels, one of the best stories we've seen in football this year. For my money, the best rookie quarterback I've ever seen with the ability to get it done in the playoffs. I think that is what puts it over the top. He was obviously tremendous during the regular season, rookie of the year and all that, but it's the playoff success now on top of that and winning games because of Jaden Daniels in the playoffs that puts it over the top for me. It's like, all right, this is the best rookie season we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now he's got a chance to be the first rookie quarterback in NFL history to play in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, what did Ben Roethlisberger do at year two?
Year two, yeah.
It would be an incredible story. I think probably locally people don't want that. Just the idea that this Caleb versus Jaden narrative, and I know people say, oh, I don't care, I don't pay attention. You do. You might not want to pay attention, but nobody wants to spend an offseason hearing about how the Bears took, like Chris Canty said, Sam Bowie the other day. What?
No.
Nobody wants to spend an offseason with this looking even worse in the eyes of the national talking heads because Jaden Daniels has made a Super Bowl and, God forbid, win it. Like, I just, locally, I imagine Bears fans are done with this. Enough with the Washington Commanders. Enough with Jaden Daniels. Let the Eagles be the brick wall that repels them.
When I think about going into next year with those two guys, like, both can be good, right?
Of course.
And hopefully the tide is changing a little bit here. When I see, like, how he's just gone about everything this year, everything's been, like, quiet with him, it feels like. And he's just let his play speak for itself. And it's like, now you get the story from yesterday, where his jersey swap with Terrion Arnold, he put 1-2-3 Cancun on it. Like, that's now, all right, we're going to start to hear some stories now about Jaden Daniels and, like, the lore that went into this rookie season.
He's creating a mythology. Good for him. Look, man, I have to eat crow on it. I'm the guy who said I didn't believe this was possible. In LSU, he's a different quarterback than he was at LSU. And I have to give the credit to Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch him in college, if you go back and really watch the tape, he was not keeping his eyes downfield. He was not running to reset the pocket and find a passing lane. He was running to run. And I think something like only 16 of his scrambles ended in a pass. That was brutal. At LSU, it was the thing that scared me the most, because typically that won't translate to the NFL. But he hasn't been that style of player with Washington. He is looking downfield more. The deep ball has been electric. And it's not just the between the 40s play that's impressive. Even in the red zone, they're finding ways to use him as a complete weapon. It's an astounding first season. He's the best rookie quarterback I have ever seen. I still have some questions going forward. I think he's got to get a little weight on.
Oh, yeah. Like, that to me is, I don't think it's the most impressive part, but the most surprising part.
The health?
Is that he really hasn't missed all. I mean, there was the Carolina game right before the Bear game where he got hurt. And it was looking like he was not going to play against the Bears earlier this season. And they sent him out there, and he never missed any time after that. And I couldn't believe it was a rib injury and a rookie quarterback. Like, you're kind of playing with house money already at that point in the season. Let him get healthy, and he's been out there, and he takes hits. It's not like he's not getting hit. He is getting hit, and he's just popping back up every single time.
Which is the issue that I've had with his game going back to college. Like, if you've never seen it, or if you don't watch a lot of college football, or you don't go watch a lot of tape, go to YouTube when you have time and look up Jaden Daniels' hit versus Ole Miss. And then just factor in, like, trust me on it, there were a lot of those.
Yeah.
And when you take those hits and you're built the way he is, I have a hard time believing you're going to stay healthy in the NFL. So far, he has. But I do think, like, if there's one thing that he's got to do this offseason, I can't say anything about his game. His game's incredible. Mm-hmm. I would just hit the weight room, bulk up a little bit,
slide,
and learn to slide.
Mm-hmm. Because or get out of bounds.
We got to keep you healthy. Mm-hmm. You're better than anybody could have imagined. You got to stay healthy.
Yep. You want to talk NFL playoffs with us, 312-332-3776. I do want to hit on a little Bears nugget with you, too, because there have been some coaching hires, in case you missed them from yesterday.
How about the Cowboys' new defensive coordinator?
That as well. But there's one guy that I'm going to veto. I am going to say, nope, you cannot have him, Chicago Bears, for your offensive coordinator. We'll do that when we come back.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago. Welcome back to Tyler Rocky and Shay Norling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
Come on. Ben Johnson was announced as the next Bears head coach earlier this week, and he's started to fill out the staff a little bit. Has already poached a couple guys from Detroit as well. Yep. Antoine Randle-L, former Super Bowl hero, local guy, IU Hoosier. I mean, how many? Do you have a lot of Hoosier fans in your life?
No.
No? I got quite a few texts from the Hoosiers in my life about Antoine Randle-L.
Were they hyped?
I got who from all of them. But yeah, so there's that. He will come over and be the assistant head coach and receivers coach. Al Harris, the former Packer.
That's a tremendous hire, by the way.
You look at the way that Dallas has turned, they've had the second most interceptions in football since Al Harris was brought in as the defensive backs coach.
The way I'd frame it for people, just to like zoom out and give you the 30,000 foot view, other fans around the NFL, other teams around the NFL are like stunned by some of the coaching hires that are coming through with the Bears. People generally feel like Ben Johnson is assembling an elite staff.
Mm-hmm.
Feel very good about what's happening.
Yeah. And the other one from yesterday, dust off your NCAA 14 games, JT Barrett coming in as the quarterback's coach. He was the assistant quarterback's coach in Detroit and will be elevated to the big boy job when he comes over here.
I could not be more impressed by what they're doing.
Well, the big one that still remains to be seen is who is the defensive coordinator, and so far all signs point to Dennis Allen,
which
as good as you could do.
Would be an elite hire.
Like
and
that.
I think you've mentioned he's probably not getting another bite as a head coach.
He's already had two.
So it creates your Steve Spagnuolo. It creates like your Vic Fangio, a guy who could be here for a long period of time as your DC.
And a younger guy, too.
Yep.
Like someone that you can certainly grow side by side with and just help you with the day-to-day process. Now, there was a report yesterday because the offensive coordinator spot needs to be filled, and I don't know how you feel. I'm not super like concerned about who the offensive coordinator hire is because Ben Johnson is your play caller and head coach, and I get he's spreading himself across the organization, but he is the mastermind behind the offense. The offensive coordinator, to me, is not as important. It's not to say it means nothing. I don't believe that. But when you've got Ben Johnson, you get Ben Johnson because he kind of assumes both roles. But you do have to have someone in place with that job. Kevin Fishbane reporting yesterday that a name to watch is Jeff Nixon, currently the offensive coordinator at Syracuse University. And to that, I would say, Ben Johnson, keep your paws off. Keep your paws off.
Hold on. This is what surprises me, is that you care more about Syracuse football than you do the Bears, then?
It's not that. Like, this is my Marcus Freeman situation here. Notre Dame fans, who are also Bears fans, do not want Marcus Freeman taken away from them at Notre Dame and as the next head coach of the Bears. Obviously, that never happened.
But you're not losing Fran Brown.
But I'm losing the offensive architect of the number one passing offense in the nation to go to my team in the NFL, and he's not going to call plays.
But I think it's still a good hire. Like, you would not be that upset. You
yes,
also
I
lost
would.
Your quarterback.
And they gained another one. They got a four-star transfer from LSU. This is why, like, he is calling plays. He is the offensive architect at Syracuse. Now, ultimately, I don't know if he'll leave. Because his son also plays on the team at Syracuse. So I have a hard time thinking that he's going to leave coaching his son to take this job. And it's like the offensive coordinator does not mean enough to me in Chicago here. as it does what it is at Syracuse, where he's calling plays and he's built that offense up to what it is. Fran Brown's a defensive-minded head coach, too. So his ability to recruit and his ability to call plays, and the offense was electric this year. I don't need it. So, I don't need it in Chicago. Let Ben Johnson handle that spot and find somebody else, but keep your paws off.
If I offered any other name to be your offensive coordinator, you'd be fine with it?
Yep.
What if I offered you, like, some Packer washout? You're
Luke
cool Getsy, with it?
Come on down. Don't care. Don't care.
I think there is an advantage here because Ben Johnson will be the play caller. That, like, my kind of thought process on it, and this was when I thought Hank Fraley was in play, which he's not. He's staying with Detroit. But I think that if you're an offensive head coach that's going to be a play caller, you should use the offensive coordinator position as a way to poach an elite position coach from somewhere else rather than getting a play caller from college. So I don't care either way because it doesn't impact my life.
Right.
But for your sake, I can hop on board.
It's tinkering with lives.
There's
here.
No reason to take Jeff Nixon.
Yeah. Listen, that's not to say he's not a great coach. I think he is. He spent some time in the NFL, was a running back coach with the Giants when Saquon was there. Not to say that he's taken credit for what Saquon is as a player, but yeah, I don't need it. Stay in college, Jeff. I don't need you here in Chicago. Selfishly, I would rather you stay with Syracuse. So, when we come back, Shea is headed to one of his least favorite places today, mentally.
Yeah.
We'll discuss.
This is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.